Inside the Film Pod.
Alrighty, thanks for joining us inside the Film Pod. I'm Adam Filmy Film, and with me, Edgar, a goddamn marvel of modern science, Choco Ram. Edgar, how you doing?
I'm doing well, but I don't think we're any crazier than any motherfucker that's out there on the streets.
Is that a quote? This is. I think you're just saying that, and just genuinely.
I could be.
Because you really think them crazies are out there.
They always are.
Anyway, it's a madhouse here at the Film Pod because we are reviewing the Academy Award winner of 1970. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. You have the date?
1975.
1975. But first, Edgar, what have you seen recently?
The only movie that I can remember that I've seen exactly a week ago was Candyman. The one with Tony Todd, the 1992 Clive Barker film. Who can
take a sunrise? See, now I just have the song stuck in my head.
Candyman.
I was actually anticipating that song to be playing some way in it.
The Candyman.
Okay, now.
So, what happens in the movie? Is that even related to that song?
No.
No.
I was hoping it was because I expected it to be kind of cheesy because.
Who's in it?
Tony Todd and I forget the main actress's name, but it deals with a college.
I have no idea who Tony Todd is. He sounds like a Tim Burton character.
He's more of a guy of a character actor from horror films. But
before we go into this, your whole dealio. Okay. I'm figuring out what.
But
kind
the
of
movie
this
isn't
is.
Really much of a horror as much as it is a thriller, considering that it deals with a college graduate by the name of Helen who. Does a study on urban legends, specifically on a character named Candyman who ends up killing people with a hooked hand as he was murdered 200 years prior. And the only way that you can bring him to life is by saying Candyman 5 times.
Okay, so that like one-ups Beetlejuice? Like, Beetlejuice is 3 times. Candyman, you gotta say it 5 times.
And he has a hook for a hand and he will kill you. And as the movie progresses, it just really kind of messes with your head because you see this reality where what she sees and what other people see. And it's a really good suspense thriller film. There really wasn't as many on-screen kills as I expected, but there are those chills, and it was one of those few horror films released that have actually made me kind of jump in my seat. There was one scene specifically because I'll just spoil this one thing. It's implied that they killed a small child, like a newborn baby.
Mm-hmm.
And when you first see that, you feel the intensity of everything going on. And I recommend it to a lot of people.
Wait,
and
why is he called Candyman?
Well, he was an artist of a... He was born a slave. He's a black man who has a very seductive voice, as they explain it to him. He actually wears like the pimp fur
like,
coat.
Is he Morgan Freeman?
No.
Black man's seductive voice sounds like Morgan Freeman.
No, he's...
Wait, he's a slave that wears a pimp fur coat?
He wears it.
A good owner.
Yeah. But...
Or a weird owner.
No, but the thing is, they explain the whole story in the film where he ended up being born a slave in like 1800s.
What's this have to do with Candy,
Edgar? It's as it progressed because he fell in love with a white woman and he impregnated her.
What's this got to do with Candy?
Let me explain. What happened was that he sent out a few people to go kill him, and what they did is cut off his arm, and then he started to go... He replaced it with a hook, and he started to go killing people.
What's
and then,
this
let me finish.
Candy?
And he added the... He added honey onto his hook so they could attract bees onto the people. And honey would have been the equivalent to the candy. And every single time he kills someone, he leaves candy with razor blades in it.
Okay. First off, honey doesn't just attract bees like magic or anything.
No, there's more to it.
Also,
but I can't
honey
remember.
Attracts bears. That's the correct way to do it. Not bees.
If you... The way that they explain it, it's that. It's just... It's interesting. It's... He's no Freddy Krueger. He's no Jason Voorhees. No Michael
he's
Myers.
He's Candyman.
No, but
he doesn't even sound so bad. He sounds like a wonderful fella. Go over and get some candy and a razor blade.
No, he's just... He's not that kind of horror aspect. He's not as terrifying
as
they are.
Wait, there's razor blades in the candy, so it's just like Halloween.
Yeah.
In bad places.
But other than that, I thought it was a pretty well-made film, better than I expected, because I know Clive Barker from his Hellraiser stuff, and it's, for me, it wasn't that great of a film, the Hellraiser films. But Candyman actually captivated me. I'm not going to go see the sequels, though.
No, it didn't captivate you that much.
No.
But are you just afraid, Edgar? The Candyman will come. Don't say his name.
I've said it three times. I've said it three times so far.
Three isn't enough. Wait, Candyman? Just in your entire life?
No, you just have to say it in front of a mirror.
In front of a mirror?
Yeah, it's basically...
So it's Bloody Mary.
Yes, it's in that aspect. It's really interesting on how it blends it, though. Mm-hmm. It's...
With Bloody Mary, but Beetlejuice.
Bloody juice?
Yeah. What if you say Beetlejuice three times and then Bloody Mary three times? Is it three for Bloody Mary? I think it's three.
I think it's three.
And then Candyman five times, you just have them all duke it out.
Beetlejuice?
Beetlejuice would win.
Yeah. Because
he's Batman.
Yes. He's also Mr. Mom.
Mr. Mom?
Yeah.
I've not seen the movie.
Don't
watch it?
Don't.
Okay. So I saw... So I'm glad you were not disappointed with Candyman, because I was disappointed with The Man Who Wasn't There by the Coen Brothers. So, because I look like noir, Billy Bob Thornton, Coen Brothers, hot damn. No, it was really disappointing. It wasn't a horrible movie, but like when you see like A Serious Man and you see The Big Lebowski, or even True Grit, although True Grit doesn't really have that kind of same style. Like, True Grit's a different kind of Coen Brothers movie. But, like, the movie should be good, because everything going for it is good. But, I don't know, I think, like, the Coen Brothers just dropped the ball on this one.
Well, give me a quick synopsis.
So, it's called The Man Who Wasn't There, and that, like, right off the bat, you should figure out, if you're smart, if you have a brain, is Billy Bob Thornton, who's the main character. And it's set in, like, 40s, 50s-ish. Like, I love the way it's set, because it's a noir, but it's in the 50s, so it's like, you look at it like a noir, and it's almost the right time that noirs are, but it's actually slightly ahead. And so, just doing that, it, like, makes everything slightly off. But anyway, so Billy Bob Thornton is a barber, and his life's basically just really boring. And, there's this guy that approaches him, who, like, he's starting this newfangled business called dry cleaning, and he needs $10,000.
Dry cleaning.
And Billy Bob Thornton knows that his wife is cheating on him with this one guy, the Sopranos guy, the main Sopranos guy. I forget his name, but he's like, you know, they're neighbors. Or friends of the family or whatever. And he knows that they're cheating. Or she's cheating on him and with the other dude. And so like Billy Bob Thornton blackmails him to get money for the dry cleaning business. To become partners with the dude. And that sets in motion the rest of the story. And like that sounds good. Sounds like a noir plot. You know, blackmail, cheating. You know, everything. Like the movie looks great. It's in black and white. And like just the right kind of black and white, like the lighting, because like, you know, you don't just make a movie black and white to make it look like a noir. Like there's this style of lighting that makes a movie like noir, you know, as opposed to just being black and white. And like the art direction's great, acting is great, but it's somewhere between the directing and the script where it just falls apart. Like it's too slow. And there's just not enough, like, punch. Like, the thing with the Coen Brothers is just, like, there's just, like, outrageous things that, like, aren't, like, ha-ha-ha funny, but they're, like, like, they're outrageous. They're, like,
ridiculous.
I don't know. No, not ridiculous. Like, black comedy, dark comedy. That's that kind of thing where it's, like, it's funny because it's terrible. It's, like a terrible situation that everyone else is acting like this is normal, and you're like, this shouldn't be right, well, but this is how it is. And
dark comedy is usually, it's most successful when it makes you uneasy, but it forces you to laugh at the same time.
Yeah, like, A Serious Man did that, right? And, like, I really relate the movies to A Serious Man and Big Lebowski because they're really trying for the same thing. Like, not so much True Grit. True Grit's, like, a different kind of story. True Grit's a good movie, but it's not the same kind of story. But, like, The Big Lebowski and A Serious Man both, like, take place in, like, a world like ours but kind of weird and off. Or I guess it's like ours, but seeing it through the Coen brothers' eyes, like, you can see the weirdness and the awfulness, and, like, seeing that truth makes you laugh, even, you know, since, but it is truth. And The Man Who Isn't There, like, tries to do that. Like, I see there are great moments in the movie where they try to do that, but, like, overall, I don't know, it just doesn't work.
And is the guy that you were speaking of as the soprano, James Gandolfini?
I have no idea how to pronounce his name. That's why when you handed me that, I didn't feel like reading it.
James Gandolfini.
Yeah, James Gandolfini. Yeah, he's the Sopranos guy. But, okay. Yeah, so it's just too slow. Like, what I love about The Big Lebowski and even A Serious Man, like, Big Lebowski, like, flowed and it was quick and it was sharp and it was just, like, on the dot. And The Serious Man was the same kind of way. Oh, The Serious Man was slower. Like, they did it right. I don't know. Because, like, The Serious Man has more stuff. Well, The Man Who Wasn't There didn't, like, revel in its, if that's the right word, like, it didn't, you know, take in its good parts long enough and spent too much time with the boring parts, which were just kind of like Billy Bob Thornton narrating in a way. Like, there are some great moments, but they happen so quick, and they go away. And it just disappointed me, made me sad.
How much did it disappoint you, though, exactly? Like, would you even consider watching it again? Or
no, I'd never watch it again.
Would you ever even recommend
it to anyone? I wouldn't even recommend it. Like, don't see it. There's no reason to see it. Like, if you're a fan of black and white, I don't know if you're, like, that hardest core fan. Like, that's the one part I really liked about it.
The style?
But, yeah. And, like, the actors were great, but it just didn't know what it was doing. I would say it's the worst Coen Brothers movie that I've seen, but I haven't seen too many of them.
Well, that's understandable. But, I mean, I guess it makes sense as to why you're making a good point. Plus, the film was released currently 10 years ago.
It doesn't look that way, though. I mean, the movie visually holds up.
But then again, the story plots, as you were saying, and everything, it's just, as you were saying in the last episode, if you listened to the holiday episode,
yeah,
it really depends on how you went in, and I guess you didn't really, how would I put this?
Well, I went in with higher expectations knowing the people behind the movie.
Exactly. But, y'all, this is also one of their earlier films, am I wrong?
Well, it's earlier than,
name me a film that you really enjoyed, by the
way. Big Lebowski, Serious Man, True Grit, although True Grit, not as much. So those two, actually, I don't think Big Lebowski did get nominated. Serious Man did get nominated for Best Picture. And it lost to, oh yeah, just not that long ago, too. It lost to Hurt Locker.
Yeah.
That was just last year?
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, see, the only thing I can really tell you is, gosh, where was I going with this? Everyone has that director. Every director has that one. Well, nonetheless, this one was only by one of them.
No, it's both.
Really?
Yeah. All of their movies are both. All the movies, I forget when, there was a rule, one director per film, but recently, I saw No Country for Old Men. That one won Best Picture, and I like that too. But recently, like, I think since No Country for Old Men, the Oscar people are like, okay, you can have two directors if they're an established duo. They have to be an established duo, and the Coen brothers won. There was some other duo, I don't remember, but the Coen brothers, like, if you, like, read or see any, like, stuff about them, they're, like, a notorious pair. Like, they're always together, and, like, what I've heard from, like, actor interviews, they talk about them saying, like, they finish each other's sentences and stuff, and they're, like, they, you know, they are totally in sync. And that's why they're always mentioned together, the Coen brothers. You don't really say, like, just, but, before that, before, like, No Country for Old Men, Joel Coen, I think it's Joel and Ethan, something like that.
Joel is the one listed.
Yeah, Joel and is Ethan, the one that gets the credit. I don't know why him. Maybe he's the oldest or something, or the one that could beat up the other one, but yeah. But they're always together.
But as I was going to say, you know how we were talking about how every director has that one bad movie?
Oh, yeah.
This could have been it.
This probably was.
Yes, it was. Everyone had, every single
Fargo
director.
Fargo was nominated. That's one of the ones I haven't seen. There might be other ones, though, I haven't heard about that are bad.
I know, but it's like everyone has that one bad movie. And I was realizing, you remember how we were talking about how we were afraid that Nolan's next Batman film might be his bad movie?
Yeah.
I realized one that could be considered that.
What?
Following.
Well, that's his first movie, so I don't really count that because that's still him growing as a director.
Yeah.
So it's not like, because now he's in his prime, and like, you know, like they release the bad movie when they're in their prime, and like sometimes, you know, they release the movie in the prime, and that's their last, like, or I mean, that's the movie that sets them in the downward spiral, like Tim Burton and something.
What would you classify it would be Tim Burton's?
Alice in Wonderland. There's something before Alice in Wonderland, though.
I would say Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Oh yeah, that came out before. Yeah, that would be.
I would say that's the start where he's
there. That's why I said the start of the downward spiral.
I haven't seen Alice in Wonderland. I saw Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Sweeney Todd, was that before or after Charlie?
After.
Yeah. Okay. So Charlie and the Chocolate Factory sounds like it is the bad one.
I actually really enjoyed Sweeney Todd, though.
Really? I haven't seen it. I heard bad things.
I mean, I went in a little skeptical because Tim Burton, I like a lot of his work. Another film I forgot to mention that I saw was A Nightmare Before Christmas.
That's not a Tim Burton film, though.
He did help with a lot of the executive production.
No,
but that's
his only credit is story by. He didn't write it. He didn't direct it. He didn't sing it. He didn't.
There's a reason it's called Tim Burton's. And that's because it's based on a short story. And
I think he probably was just like the producer.
No, he wrote the story that it's based on, and he did write a. He's an executive producer, but he couldn't direct it.
But
because
he didn't
he was
direct
busy.
It, and that's the most important part of a film.
True, but back to what I was saying. I like a lot of his work.
Well,
and,
yeah. I like Ed Wood was great. What else did he do? Did he do Chocolate? I don't know if he did that.
I don't think so. I like Pee-wee.
I remember, what?
I like Pee-wee. Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Oh, Jesus. That's, I don't even want to touch that.
Have you never seen it?
Yes, I have seen it.
Okay.
But I just don't even want to go there because that's just a twisted world. But, what else? I can't. Batman.
Big Fish.
Remember liking Batman. Big Fish is great. I would say Big Fish is my favorite Tim Burton film. That or Ed Wood.
And as I was saying, it's just his aesthetic and then kind of a musical thing to it. Because this isn't a recent play. It's an old play. And it's been interpreted quite a few times.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
Anyway, ever since then, he hasn't really made great films like he used to. Like Big Fish is great, you know? He hasn't done that. And since Charlie, he's gone down. You can say that, at least.
It's more like a roller coaster. It goes up and down.
Yeah, I guess.
It's a very rare up, but it...
Yeah. So, like, Christopher Nolan, he's due. He's due for a bad one, because he hasn't made a bad movie since Following. And even that, I would say, is probably better than some of Tim Burton's better stuff.
Better?
Like, I'd say Following is better than maybe, like, the original Batman.
I could dispute that.
Well, I would definitely say Dark Knight is better than Tim Burton's Batman. But anyway, I don't count Following because that's him still growing. That's him going up. So now he's at his prime. He's due for a bad one.
He
which
is.
Very well could be Dark Knight Rises.
Which I have to say, I predict it would be... It won't be anywhere near as good as The Dark Knight. And it'd be lucky if it's as good as...
You never Batman know, though, Begins. Because... I thought when The Dark Knight came out, I was like, it can't be as good as Batman Begins. And then
I expected it to be better than Batman Begins. I didn't expect it to be as well as it was, but
yeah.
I can.
But anyway, he hasn't made a terrible movie yet. Not yet.
Not yet. It could also be Man of Steel.
Mm-hmm. Well, Man of Steel is not his. He's not directing. He's just writing. That's Zack Schneider. Which,
true.
If he makes a bad one, it's not that big of a surprise. I don't know. He's not like a super great director.
What else has he directed?
300.
He's into comic book stuff.
Yeah.
So, he would have probably some kind of artistic feel.
Well, I don't know if he has an artistic feel. He's his one thing.
Well, realize...
He did
I would,
the Spirit also, I think. Or maybe that was just the producers or something. I don't even know.
See, if I want to see someone who directs a comic book film, I want someone who's an actual fan of the comic. That's why I think X-Men sort of bounces around in my head as a... Depends on whether you want it.
Have you seen First Class?
No, I haven't.
I've heard that's the best one.
That's what I heard, but I mean, from what I've seen, because I'm judging it off Bryan Singer, because he's an amazing director. But he wasn't a fan of X-Men when he directed it. And I feel that if we got someone who was actually a stronger fan, it would have been based a little bit better
on
the actual comics. But I like the meaning that he was trying to get. And it's... If you can blend someone who has a strong imagery and who knows and understands everything and knows how to blend that perfectly with the actual comic origins,
yeah,
then you would have the greatest comic book film.
You need a fan of it often because they understand what the fans want because they are a fan. Like with the Muppets movie, which I have not seen, but I heard is really good. What's his face was like the biggest fan of Jim Henson ever. And then he made the movie and turned out good because he knew what people wanted and that's what he gave.
Exactly. You just have to be a fan of it.
Mm-hmm. So do you remember anything else you saw?
Well, like I stated, it was just A Nightmare Before Christmas. And the only thing I can really say about that, because I'm sure everyone's seen it by now, I saw it before most of you. I actually own it on VHS, and I bought it when it was first released.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen it pretty much so many times. At one point, I memorized every line.
Wow.
I was a young kid. I saw it when I was really
it's not that great of a movie that you need to know every line. But, I forgot what I was going to say. Oh, what I've been watching recently, not a movie, but a TV show. I'm actually watching a TV show, Edgar. That's on Netflix, though. With my dad. It's Twin Peaks.
I've heard of it.
Yeah. You need to get your ass and watch that right now.
I've seen episodes.
It's great. Like, you have to watch it from the beginning. You have to watch it.
Yeah, I know.
Because it's an homage / parody of soap operas. And it's just, it's so hard to describe. It's just brilliant.
I know. I've seen parts of it. And I know that they made a whole homage episode to in Psych because they visited Twin Peaks.
Wow.
You haven't seen that?
I don't watch Psych.
I think it was Psych. And it was just really humorous because it blends in that perfect style of comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And it was...
Well, I don't think Psych's like Twin Peaks, though. No. Not saying Psych's bad. I'm just saying it's not the same kind of comedy because Twin Peaks' comedy is pretty unique, I would say.
No, I know.
Yeah.
And like I've said, I've seen a few episodes here and there. I'm surprised that it took you...
I'm just finally getting to it because it's finally, you know, it's on Netflix now. And,
yeah.
Or it's been on Netflix, but now I've recently got Netflix. I'm not that big of a TV person, and I especially don't like TV where you have to watch the first one to understand what's going on.
So basically you don't like a continuing story.
Yeah,
arc.
But Twin Peaks is like a special one because it's just, it's so hard. I can't describe it. I can't just give you like a funny thing because if I were to say it, it's not that funny. Like, there's a fish in the percolator. That sounds really stupid. You watch it, and it's just wonderful. And you know what it reminds me of, though? The Shining, which I haven't seen the whole thing, but I saw a lot of it. And
but The Shining also has Jack Nicholson and Scatman Crothers.
It's Scatman Crothers, who is also in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Before we get that, I want to talk more about Twin Peaks.
Okay.
Okay? No, I don't. Let's get to some news. That's what we need to get to.
News.
Golden Globe nominations announced. New Spider-Man photos. Prometheus. Trailer and poster. Holy shit. Science fiction fans should be excited. The Hobbit gets more press as things about it are released. And on the box office front, Sherlock at number 1. Alvin and the Chipmunks at number 2. Humanity makes me sad.
Okay, I don't want to talk too much about the news because we're already over time.
Talked about the news already. We were talking about how we expect The Dark Knight, which had just released more posters and more of a trailer, on how we expected our expectations.
Yes, but I want to talk about a different movie, Edgar. I think you know what it is. Just say it.
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest?
No! The news. Prometheus, Edgar! Every goddamn science fiction fan, gather around. Prometheus is coming out. It's real. We all knew it's real for a while, but the trailer, you know, we saw that when we were...
We went to go see a girl.
Yeah, a girl with a dragon tattoo. And my God, it's everything I could have ever asked for and more.
Okay, let me just put this in. Let me put in my two cents. And that's, I'm not too big of a science fiction fan. I usually kind of steer away from it unless it's really cheesy and really stupid. And this one caught my interest really, really well and really strongly, and I really want to go see this.
Like, there's just one little shot where it shows, like, the spaceship flying, and that was the most beautiful thing like I've ever seen. Not really, but it's damn beautiful. And, like, I love... Because, like, one thing I didn't realize till I saw this scene, like, something we lost with computer generation is, like, a lot of science fiction things... We had the matte paintings and stuff. You know, the big, beautiful murals and stuff. Which, you know, now look kind of bad, but Like, Alien has some great ones. The Thing actually had some great ones. The original, which thing? Or the Carpenter Thing. And I was like, I didn't see until this trailer. I was like, why haven't I've seen more shots like this where, like, the computer generation mimics, like, the feel you get from a matte painting. Like even big, like, expansive shots, I don't know, don't have that same feeling. And for some reason, something about the art makes me, it's like the feeling you get from the matte painting, but it's computer generated, so it looks awesome. It's just, it's got all the smoke and the clouds, and then it's like the planet from Alien. Although, I heard, like, Ridley Scott said it's not the planet from Alien, but it looks just like it, and it has the same ship. But,
See, this is the thing, though. People are speculating that this is a prequel to the original Alien. It hasn't necessarily been confirmed, but it's a safe assumption.
The trailer shows that it basically is. It has the exact same... Like, I don't know if it's, like... This is what I'm guessing. Maybe it's not exactly a prequel to Alien, but I think it takes place in the same universe as Alien. You know what I mean? Like, the same... Like, or not the time, but, like, the same timeline as Alien. Like, these people exist in that same universe. Yeah. So, that set, like, it totally has stuff from Alien. Like, I don't know what it's called, what it is, but there's this room where, like, in the original Alien, they see, like, this giant skeleton, and, like, it looked like there was a race of bigger people living there. They have the same room in the Prometheus trailer with this, like, I don't know if it's a gun or whatever, like, device. This science fiction-y device that has a chair in the center of the room. It's the exact same room. Exact same room from Alien. And, like, oh, it's everything I've ever wanted.
We might have to get to that one.
It looks great. They've got space suits. There's spaceships. Alien planets. What more could you want, you know?
All I can tell you right now is that we might have to get to that one as Prometheus.
Yes, we will, Edgar. We have to. I will pay for you just to force us to go watch it.
No, okay. Just one last thing.
I will make you pay, actually.
You'll make me pay because yeah. It's so awesome.
But I'm as excited as when I saw the Avatar trailer. Hopefully I won't be as disappointed as when I saw Avatar, but the trailer of Avatar, you know, looked really awesome. And this movie trailer looks even cooler.
Actually, I'll one up this because I didn't like Avatar either. You just clearly made it clear that it disappointed you.
It's not a terrible movie, but yeah, it disappointed me.
And it really disappointed me from what I've seen. I have not been able to sit the whole way through.
Really? It's not that bad?
I couldn't get into it. Bad. I'll have to sit down and watch it all, and I'll give you my full opinion, but it's... This one just doesn't seem to have the same feel, because the other one was more magical, almost... fantasy, not necessarily sci-fi, but this one is the whole sci-fi horror feel to it, and it's
because Ridley Scott back in action.
Exactly, you want sci-fi horror, you don't want sci-fi fantasy.
That's true.
You want
actually, I agree with you.
Sci-fi to be terrifying, or you want it to be not just
always. Star Wars, you could kind of say that's sci-fi. Fantasy. I know that's. I'm saying Star Wars is sci-fi fantasy, and I love that too.
Okay.
It doesn't necessarily have to be horror. I like both, you know. But obviously, you're more to the horror end of the spectrum.
Because, I mean, when I see something scientific, I want it to scare me. I want it to give me this aspect where it drains me in. Because fear ends up bringing me in more than something that seems so magical.
Yeah. I like both. I like the wonders of science fiction, the things that make you go, wow, that's amazing. As well as, like, that's awesome.
See, but Star Wars...
that's scary. I don't know.
But going back to the Star Wars thing, what I like about Star Wars, while it's fantasy, as we've discussed, it integrates it well.
Yeah.
It's well
placed. That's true. Avatar is a little too Disney storybook fanciful. That's what I think you really mean. It's not like fantasy, like the actual like concept, but like... Avatar's
too
pretty.
It's too make-believe.
Yeah, too make-believe. It's like such a little story... Well, like Avatar's a story, while Star Wars is a myth. You know what I mean? Like
exactly.
Like it's a tale told, like ingrained in culture. While Avatar is like a fairy tale. That's like even though that's kind of a myth in culture. But I mean, like you know, it's make believe, fun time. While Star Wars is like a cultural background kind of.
In other words, the way that they integrate it in simply Star Wars, it's draining everything and it's putting it in. It's basically, to use this kind of metaphor loosely, it's a melting pot, and what they ended up coming out with was well put.
Yeah.
While they tried to do the same with Avatar, and it kind of came out as something you've seen already.
Yeah.
That's with a new coat of paint.
Exactly. That's exactly what Avatar is. It's something you've seen before, but with shiny special effects.
Exactly.
Basically, Pocahontas plus Fern Gully with an alien planet. Like, it's not a new story at all, which is the disappointing part. But I am happy that science fiction can get in the mainstream once in a while. As you ask someone saw Avatar, everyone's like seen Avatar.
And everyone, or like a lot of people have seen Inception as well, which is another film.
Yeah. I love it when sci-fi gets in the mainstream.
As do I, but like I said, I prefer watching
sci-fi horror. Agree with Prometheus.
Yes, we can.
Makes me happy. All right. We are like at the 30 mark. Yes, we are. All right. Let's get to One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Before we get into the synopsis, I want to give a little background. All right. So obviously this is based off a book, a novel by Ken Kesey, or Kesey, or I have no idea how to pronounce his name. But so during the making of the film, Ken Kesey, I'm just going to say Kesey, I hope that's right. He, you know, was helping the production stuff like a lot of authors sometimes do when they get adapted, you know, stories. But he got pissed the hell off because there are creative differences, as they say. And like, Ken Kesey did not like the way they were treating his story. So much so he left production, sued them, and won in a settlement. And but One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest went on to win the Big Five, which is Best Picture, Best Director, Best Lead Actor, Best Lead Actress, and one of the best screenplays. In this case, it's adapted. Screenplay. Yeah.
That wouldn't be repeated again until 1991 with Silence of the Lambs. Mm-hmm. Just gonna bite.
And One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest was the second one to do it after It Happened One Night. So it went on to win all that. So the story goes, like, one night Ken Kesey at his home, at his humble abode, was just, you know, flipping through the channels on TV, and he happened to catch this movie and it really interested him. And then he found out it was the One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest movie, so he changed channels. And that's how the story goes. So, after you heard that, I think it's time to throw in the synopsis now.
Synopsis.
McMurphy, played by Jack Nicholson, is checked into a mental institution in an attempt to get out of prison. Little does he know, McMurphy is about to discover a place more oppressive than prison. Nurse Ratched, played by Louise Fletcher, is the leader of the oppression, and their struggle begins a journey of self-discovery, electroshock therapy, and love.
It's medication time, Edgar.
No, not again. Not again.
I love this song that is playing right now. It is one of the beautiful moments. So, Edgar, give me your deal.
Give you my deal? All I can really say is this wasn't the movie I expected. Not at all. The character explanations, the way that everything is displayed in mental illness, which apparently, according to the trivia you and I have read, some of the extras were real mental patients.
Yes.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
I really enjoyed this film. I really did. I didn't expect to enjoy this film, and I feel I was laughing at times that I shouldn't have. So many of the performances
were... What do you mean like that? Where you're like, ha ha, he's a retard. Like, none of that fucked up stuff, Edgar. I know you're not laughing like that.
No, it's... I guess...
Actually, you did laugh when I said that. No, go on, go on. Give me your deal.
At Jack Nicholson's spot, all of his lines, they were delivered so perfectly and so witty and smart. And even the times he was insulting people and the way that he was just delivering clever things. Some of the therapy scenes were even making me laugh just because of how awkward and dark it was. It was just kind of almost monotonous on how Nurse Ratched was just giving them the cold stare.
Yeah, Nurse Ratched.
We'll talk about her.
Yeah, we'll get to her.
But I enjoyed so many of these performances, and I didn't even expect to see so many future stars in this.
Oh,
like Danny DeVito.
Let me tell the story. Okay, so watching this movie, there's a character named Martini. He's sort of a side character. He's one of like the main, I guess, main group. There's, you know, the main group.
Yes.
The, what are they called? Well, anyway, there's a name for it. But and I look at him, and he's this short guy, kind of hairy. I'm like, you know, Danny DeVito could play that guy. I think that through the whole movie. I'm like, Danny DeVito could totally play that guy. He looks a lot like Danny DeVito. So, after watching the movie, going on IMDb, doing my research, it turns out Danny DeVito did play that guy, and that guy, and Martini is played by Danny DeVito, so I feel like an idiot, because I was like, that guy could be Danny DeVito, and it is. So, wow. Danny does a wonderful job in that movie, because I didn't even know it was him.
No, and then another one that I didn't expect to see was Christopher Lloyd.
Scott, Edgar.
I know, I expected him to pull a DeLorean out of nowhere and just start riding everywhere.
Oh, if we're talking about casts from other movies, we should mention that Scatman Crothers, not very big actor, but he's been in a number of things. He's been in, like, a remake of Twilight. I think Twilight Zone movie, maybe.
Maybe.
Or just one of the new episodes. Newer episodes. Not new, but...
Scatman
Crothers is also in The Shining
with Jack,
you know, Jack Nicholson.
Exactly, and I expected something to just go.
As soon as he comes in, we were thinking Jack Nicholson about to go crazy and axe some people, which doesn't happen. It's not that kind of movie. But yeah.
But like I said, the movie just felt so dark, but it was so funny in so many aspects because he was Jack Nicholson being the not crazy guy. Him being basically the one who has everything sane didn't seem right to me. Not at first, anyway, and all his lines and all his deliveries were just so witty and so quick, and how he basically started to bond with this, I guess, family, with all the people he was often surrounded with. And especially his strongest attachment to the youngest one of the group, I would have to say, Billy. Which I know his name because his name.
It's hard to pronounce though.
His first name is Brad Dioif, I think. Or
oh yeah, the first name's easy, Brad. But it's like Dioif, Dioif. That sounds so wrong.
It's French, I think. But I know him. Meta knowledge. It's just I recognized him off. I was like, he looks so familiar. Where do I know him from? Mm-hmm. I look up on IMDb and I see that he's the voice of Chucky, and I'm what the hell?
But he does a phenomenal job in this movie, like. It's like hard to describe like what makes it good. It's just like he performs so well that it feels like he actually has problems stuttering in real life. Like,
yeah.
And the way he like does his lines, I was about to stutter right there. Wait, the way he does his lines is like it doesn't feel like they're lines. It feels like that's just him talking, like him in that situation. Like he really was like a step up from like everybody in that movie. Not that everyone else in the movie is bad. It's just he was amazing. And he got nominated but did not win. I don't know who actually won. But nominated for Best Supporting Actor.
Exactly. But, I mean, since this film, I've seen maybe two or three other films with him being there as a person. Because he's become such an established voice actor. Hence why I said he's the voice of Chucky, which is what I recognize him most from. Mm-hmm. And I've seen those movies since I was a really, really young child. And they scared the hell out of me.
Yeah. Even though, looking at it now, I don't know, because he's a doll. Anyway, back to the movie, Edgar. Give him some more dealio.
Well, it's... I like the contrast between Jack Nicholson and Fletcher in the aspect of Nurse Ratched and McMurphy, because they're so different.
Yeah, they're the two that really make the struggle in this movie.
They are, and then Jack Nicholson is just always playing around and having so much fun. But where the movie kind of lost me and it made me feel really dissatisfied was at the very end, because the film was so... It was a dark film, but it was kind of happy because you see him bonding... You see McMurphy bonding with everyone, and especially with Billy, as I mentioned already, and Chief, who we haven't talked about. And then it ends on such a tragic note. And it just didn't feel... It was too bittersweet.
Yeah.
I didn't expect it to be so dark.
I like the ending a lot.
I like the ending, but it was...
Well, yeah, it makes you sad.
Yeah, it's not what I expected.
Yeah.
I expected it to be something so different. And I know how the novel ends. Mm-hmm. I just didn't really think that they would go through with that.
Well, yeah, because the movie is quite a bit different from the novel. Especially, like, perspective is the novel is all from the chief's perspective. But in the movie, it's really all about McMurphy. And the chief's really a side character until, like, he, like, slowly gets more and more, yeah, into the movie.
And I actually really like the chief's character, too. Well, he didn't say much.
Yeah, I was like, he's the most perfect casted actor ever. Like, he just he stepped out of the book. Like, yeah. He's just too perfect. How'd they find the guy? Like, how do you find a giant Indian man who can act? Like, how do they find people like that?
I have no clue.
Yeah. And I've never seen him in anything else, though.
I think he was in Poltergeist 3.
Well, okay, that shows you where he went.
Before we go anywhere else. Yeah, he had a short acting career. He died in 1987. Mm-hmm. But the thing I really enjoyed about this film was just the whole aspect of how you see him go from being, oh, I don't care, I'm just going to break out of this, it's no big deal, to growing some kind of development. He could have left without even saying goodbye to any of them. But he
couldn't because of his connections with...
Yes, yeah. He had that strong connection where he just had to say goodbye to all of them. He had to wake them up and give them one last party, one last go.
Mm-hmm.
And
then even after that, but I don't want to spoil anything.
No, we're not going to spoil any of that, but just it was really, really strong and really powerful.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed all of that, and especially because I didn't expect Jack Nicholson to be as good as he was. I recently saw The Shining, and I thought he was good in that too.
Mm-hmm.
But this one by far outdoes his performance there.
Well, yeah, he won Best Actor for it. So let's get to old Adam's point of view now. And it is going to go down a bit. Sort of. So I'll just... Let's revisit my tripod with four legs. So, story, form, acting, and prevailing conditions. So prevailing conditions, we'll start with that one. I read the novel in high school, though. So it's been a while. Like a long enough time.
I hadn't, but everyone else in my class...
I didn't read it for actual school, though.
No, no, you and I didn't take that kind of English.
Yeah, we were in Shakespeare.
Yeah.
Come on, yeah.
No, but everyone else read it, and everyone else was like, oh, and I could hear everyone else talking.
Yeah.
Because...
But, yeah, so I read it just on my own time. Like, it was one of those, you know, assignments where you get to pick your own book. I happened to pick One Flew Out of the Cuckoo's Nest. And then I saw, like, half of the movie a long-ass time ago. Like, before I even read the novel. And, like, I barely remember it from that. So, like, I really didn't have much going in except what I remember from the novel. And with the novel, it's more about the, like, mechanized oppression. Well, in this one, it seems more like it's Nurse Ratched, which you know, is how it is in the novel, because her name, Ratched, is sort of representative of, like, the mechanized oppression. Like, you know, when you lose character and, like, you know, it's not about people, it's just about, like, stats and, like, medication and, you know, you lose the human factor. Exactly. And, like, I feel like Nurse Ratched is actually well representative because she's, like, barely even a person in the movie. You know, she's this cold, like, heartless woman, which is what she is in the novel. But, yeah, the novel was from the chief's perspective. And I actually like where the movie went with this, how it's about McMurphy. Because even though the novel's from the chief's perspective, it's more about McMurphy because McMurphy is the interesting character that the chief observes.
Which, once again, this is how we end up going from the other day when we were speaking on how...
Mm-hmm.
Mainly the whole dragon with the girl with the dragon tattoo. This is where a good example of how the narrator in the novel isn't necessarily an interesting character. Great Gatsby, as we were talking about.
Yeah.
Do you recall that?
Yeah.
And I hope our listeners recall that from our other podcast. Yeah.
But so anyway, actually, this is a nice transition from Prevailing Kitchens into story. So, like, I like the story. I like some of the ideas of the story. Like, I like the idea of, like, Jack Nicholson and the mental patients versus Nurse Ratched and the orderlies. And, so what carries this movie, though, is definitely acting. Like, that's where I love the movie the most, is, like, performances were just wonderful. Danny DeVito. He was great, actually. I would say the best Danny DeVito performance I've ever seen.
I haven't seen everything in his
career, yeah, yes, but I don't know. What I can think of, this is definitely the best.
I'd agree.
Every character there, Cheswick's character, or Cheswick is the character, he was great, and Christopher Lloyd was great. Everybody was great. So that's what really made the movie one step up, but let me get to the bad.
No, I just have to tell you one thing. Christopher Lloyd looked like he was going to completely kick someone's ass.
I know, he's got a buzz cut. He looks like a mean man, not like Doc from Back to the Future at all.
I just had to say that because I didn't talk about that in my part. You go.
Okay, so what disappointed me in this movie is definitely... actually, it's somewhere in between the story and the directing again. It's like... The directing wasn't that great. Nothing about it really wowed me again, you know. I can't wait till we get to a Spielberg movie or something. Then I'll be like, the directing was great and it wowed me. Because this is what I've been saying like every podcast now. Is the directing's not that great. We haven't gotten... Except Memento. That was great. But for the most part, I haven't gotten to anything like spectacular. But the performances really like stepped it up. And like... That's a good, like, for me, you know, a good movie really needs a good directing, and so, best picture, I don't know. Best actor, yeah, sure. And, like, story, like, I think the movie kind of actually took a little too much focus on the characters, and the story sort of suffered from it, because, like, I felt like they were sort of pointless, fun moments between characters. Like, you're supposed to have the struggle between Nurse Ratched and Jack Nicholson, or
McMurphy. Oh, and it escalates pretty high, I will say.
I don't know. To me, it was just like, it was just hijinks and shenanigans, and you could get fun with the characters. I didn't feel like there was a real struggle going on. It was like Jack Nicholson's dicking around until something bad happens in the end.
Okay, the only thing I can really tell you here is, I agree with you. There's too much of a focus. You don't even realize why he's there. They dropped the line twice. They dropped the line twice. But for the rest of the part, you forget.
Yeah.
It's not even the important section to it or why he's there.
Yeah, like, the thing is, like, the movie just it had fun with just characters being cute, or not cute, but, you know, characters just being characters, but there was no substance. There was substance, but there wasn't enough substance to really, like, move the story along. Like, I just sort of felt like I was just sort of with them watching day-to-day kind of boring stuff. Like, the basketball thing. Like, all these moments are great. Don't get me wrong. I love the moments. It's just...
You don't like how they're not integrated into the plot.
It's not... It doesn't move forward enough. Like, it's almost like a documentary in that it's not really about a story. It's just about what happened, I guess.
But see,
I don't know if that's the right way to say it. It's just like you just see them do stuff and then... Like, all of a sudden, at the end, the movie starts, or the, like, story starts moving. At the very, very end, the movie starts going, and then bam, it ends.
See, that's why I like it, though, because it's just, while McMurphy has the main plot, and he's supposed to have the big story arc, you see how he becomes basically the life center that everyone is clinging on to, and everyone realizes who they can be. Midway through the film, we find out that half of them are voluntary.
Mm-hmm.
They don't even need to be there. If they wanted to, they could just pack their bags and leave.
Yeah.
No questions asked. And it's him who's bringing them out of their shell and telling them,
yeah,
you're not crazy. You're not either. As I said earlier, you're no crazier than any asshole who's outside.
Yeah.
And it's true. Yeah, they're a little awkward.
Mm-hmm.
You see Danny DeVito's character always smiling and always just kind of doing funny things. He breaks a cigarette and says, here's a nickel kind of thing. And it's nothing special, but you see how he kind of accepts them for who they are instead of them being considered outcast and just insane.
Yeah, but, like, the thing is, I felt like you're saying halfway through the movie, like, halfway through the movie that happens and, like, they're all buddies and everything and then it's just shenanigans. Like, there are great moments in the film. Like, I can pick out a scene, you know, like, where they go and they pretend to be doctors and they're on the boat. That's great. It's fun stuff. And like, there's the baseball thing, the World Series thing, and then there's the party. There's a great moments in the film, but that's it. The movie's not better than the sum of its parts. Like, the parts don't add up right, I don't think. Like, they're great moments, but as a whole, is it a great movie? I don't know. It's a great group of scenes. It's great performances, but it's a great movie. To me, a movie has to be all-encompassing. It has to tie all these pieces together. And I don't feel like it does that. So, like, I like some of the... I don't believe it deserves Best Picture. Because, like, Best Picture is, like, overall. That's the one where it ties it all together. You know, I don't think it does deserve that. But acting-wise, is great. You know,
see,
but
I combat that complete argument because I do think it deserves Best Picture, and maybe not the greatest picture ever, per se. But for that year, from most of the nominees, I've seen a few of the films. Jaws was one of them. And
yeah, see, Jaws is definitely, I would say that's better picture. Better picture. Now, there's much better acting in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, by far. But Jaws is a better movie as a whole.
But see, I love Jaws.
Yeah, I know. You've said that before.
I have, and I... Like I said, I enjoy this film so much more, and I enjoy the characters. The ending felt so tragic, but that's because I became so attached.
Well, yeah, tragic ending is good, and when you feel emotions, that's good. Not necessarily, you don't have to feel happy coming out of a movie. You can be like, no. That's so sad, but it's still a great movie.
Like, I felt so attached to Jack Nicholson's character, and when the tragic ending happens, I began to like these people. I felt like I got to know them, and that's why I think the shenanigans, as you were saying, you complain about, I felt they were needed. So I could see that they're just normal people. They're nothing special. They're just like us. We could be like that.
Well, yeah, I'm just, I don't know.
And
I feel like you get to know the characters quite well earlier on, though, like halfway through. But, like, the movie doesn't pick up. You know, once there's exposition, you get all the pieces set, and then you gotta get going, and I felt like it was exposition all the way through until, like, the end.
I agree with that. I agree with that completely.
Like, you get to know the characters well and everything, and you love the actors and you love the performances, but as a story, as a movie, I don't know, it doesn't do it for me.
No, but see, for me it did. Because it takes a lot for me to just kind of develop myself into the character or have an attachment to any character.
Yeah.
That's why I don't think Jaws would have deserved it, because in comparison... Yeah, Chief Brody, or Brody as he's called throughout that whole thing, he doesn't seem to compel me as much.
Well, yeah, it all goes to depending on what you value more in a movie. And obviously it sounds like you value more acting than you do form or story.
Well, story is really important to me too, but I enjoyed the story here, but it's just, most of it was just him trying to escape, but it's kind of underdeveloped, and I forgave it because of how much fun I had with it. Which is mm-hmm. how
well,
I
yeah,
came in with
that goes to the acting. Yes. And to me, like, I need a more complete package, and I especially want more form. That's and that's why I like Jaws a lot more. That's Spielberg. I don't even need to, Spielberg. All right? It's Spielberg.
It's the bias.
Yeah, well, that bias is subjectivity with this, you know, with opinion and what we like. What we like is bias.
Very
and
true.
You're reading what we like, or not reading, listening. I am just, I can't do listening. I can say you watch us, you read us. The one that we actually are is listening. I can't say that. But that's what you like. You know, and obviously you're going to listen to this. Yes, I said it right this time. And you're going to look between our points of views and understand what you yourself value more in a movie. That's why I love my tripod with four legs.
Except it's not a tripod. It's a quad
pod. Quadpod, but
what'd you call an iPod?
An iPod? No, that's product placement from Ashton Kutcher. I say Ashton Kutcher because he looks exactly like goddamn Steve Jobs. Like, just look at him. Like when they're young, young Steve Jobs and Ashton Kutcher. If you gave Ashton Kutcher the little sunglasses, not sunglasses, glasses, he looks like Steve Jobs. It's weird.
Then he'll play the bioptic.
No, it might. It I forget who. It's like Clooney is one of the people vying for that though. One of the people that want... I know. I'm like, no. I don't think Clooney could do it.
Nope. It'd be Ashton Kutcher.
Well, he probably could act well. Clooney, but he doesn't look at all like Steve Jobs at all.
Back to what you were saying, though.
Back to what I was saying, like, what I like about my tripod with four legs is it breaks the movie up in a perfect way, all right? It's a damn perfect way to break up a movie.
It is.
Especially with the addition of the fourth leg, that really makes it a complete package. You can look at that, analyze movie with that way, and take what you want from it. Even if you, you know, don't agree with my opinions, you can see what I said about my tripod with four legs and understand what you like.
And same with me. If you don't agree with my opinions, you can at least digest it yourself.
Enough talking great about ourselves, especially me. We know I'm great. So let's get on to the ratings, I guess.
Okay, you first.
I will give it a theater. Like, I was knocking on it, but it's still a great movie. I just don't feel like it's best picture worthy. You know what I'm saying? It's a great movie. Great performances. See it for those performances. It's definitely worth it. Go to the theater. Of course you can't, but that's how our rating system works. If you could, you would, you should.
Basically, it's another, in other words, it's a strong recommend from you.
Yeah.
Not the strongest, but a strong recommend.
Yeah.
And for me, it's a must-see. This is one of the few films that I feel everyone should watch at least once and enjoy it. Even if you don't really like Jack Nicholson, you'll laugh.
How can you not like Jack Nicholson?
People don't like him.
I know.
I mean, even if you don't like him, or if you don't like Danny DeVito, or you don't like someone, you'll still enjoy
this
movie. No,
if you don't like Danny DeVito, you'll like this movie, because he's not Danny DeVito. He's completely different. I didn't even know it was him. Like, that's exactly how good he was. I didn't know it was him.
But I'm just saying, this movie is very... I didn't find a single moment of it boring.
I did.
And I was just enjoying it, and I was laughing throughout so many spots, and I was feeling the emotion there. Nothing of it really seemed cheesy, and I thought it still held up. They didn't really show anything that held off that 1970s perspective, other than them smoking in the actual meetings.
Oh, fun facts for trivia. It's set in 1963, because I think that's when the novel was probably written. But in the movie, there's a it was like ducks crossing or whatever sign. Apparently, those didn't exist in 1963. And then also Monopoly. They have plastic houses and things. Those would have been made out of wood. Not that anyone gives a crap. To me, the movie's timeless. It totally is applicable to now.
Exactly. That's why I enjoy it so much. I mean, there's nothing to really pull it out and say, oh, this could only happen then. No, this could still happen today.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully not. Because they're treated is different now. Like, the electroshock therapy, that's out now, because that's bad. They found, hey, this is terrible. And the way Nurse Ratched,
which we haven't talked about.
Which is the whole point, though. Yeah, she's... Hmm. Oh, we never got to her. We'll get to her, I guess.
Okay, after I give my recommendation, it's just... It's definitely a must-see film, and I think everyone should watch it at least once. It's one of those movies that you shouldn't pass up, because... You'll find some enjoyment in it at least at one point of the film. And I understand why it won Best Picture. Like I said before, it's not the greatest film of all time. But it's by far one of the better ones that we've seen.
Yeah.
And this is us being cultured.
Oh, yeah. We are now cultured. How many? We've seen movies that won Best Picture, Edgar. Fancy that. Alrighty, that's it for the Film Pod. You can always contact me at filmyfilm@mail.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at filmyfilmblog, and you can like us on Facebook, the Film Pod specifically. Alrighty, Edgar, over to you.
And you can follow me on Twitter at EdgarTacoRam, and you can follow me and my girlfriend Tina as we review films as often as we can on tumblr.com at CouplesCut.
Also, we're on iTunes. Alrighty, thanks for listening. Alrighty, that's it for the Film Pod. I'm Adam Filmy Film. This isn't the introduction, so why'd I say that? You already know who I am. You can always contact me at Filmy Film. No.
Yes.
We're going to edit this. Oh, well, we'll keep going, though. Alrighty, that's it for the Film Pod. I'm Adam. Help me! Oh, Jesus, why can't I say this? I say this perfectly the other time. Alrighty, that's... God damn it!
That'll be our blooper at the end.
Yeah, that will be.